no one can develop the same development of Hindu religious communities in India. Finally, at the societal level of what could be called imagined religious communities, secular nationalism and national civil religions will continue to be prominent carriers of collective identities everywhere. But ongoing processes of globalization are likely to enhance the reemergence of the great world religions as globalized, transnational, imagined religious communities. While new cosmopolitan and transnational imagined communities may emerge, the most relevant ones are likely to be once again the old civilizations and world religions. Therein lies the merit of Samuel Huntington's thesis of the clash of civilizations. But his geopolitical conception of civilizations as territorial units akin to nation states and superpowers is problematic, leading him to anticipate future global conflicts along civilizational fault lines. In fact, globalization represents not only a great opportunity for the old world religions, insofar as they can regain their transnational dimensions, but also a great threat insofar as globalization entails the deterritorialization of all cultural systems and threatens to dissolve the essential bonds between histories, peoples, and territories which have defined all civilizations and world religions. This process of dissociation is by no means uniform or homogeneous across world religions. It encounters mass resistance on the part of states which still aspire to the administrative regulation of religious groups and cultural identities over their territories, as well as on the part of churches, in the Weberian sense of the term, as religious institutions which claim or aspire to religious monopoly over their civilizational or national territories. Much of the problematic debates over religious fundamentalist resistance to secular modernity, as well as the conflicts, sometimes violent, over religious liberty, are related to those issues. There is a fundamental tension in the modern world between two well-recognized principles. There is, on the one hand, the principle of the inalienable right of the individual person to freedom of conscience, and therefore to freedom of religion, but also to freedom of conversion. This principle has assumed in all modern democratic societies the form of an unquestioned universal human right. Nobody should be coerced to believe or not to believe any particular religious doctrine. Everybody should have the right to believe or not to believe any particular religious doctrine, including the right to conversion to any particular religion. On the other hand, there is also the increasing recognition of the collective rights of peoples to protect and preserve their traditions and their cultures from colonial, imperialist, and predatory practices. Such recognition is primarily enshrined in United Nations documents on the rights of indigenous people. But it could easily be turned into a general principle of the reciprocal rights and duties of all peoples of the world to respect each other's traditions and cultures, constituting the basis of what could be called an emerging global denominationalism. It is the proliferation of deterritorialized, transnational, global imagined communities, or global UMAs, encompassing the so-called all world religions, as well as many new forms of hybrid globalized religions, such as the Baha'is, the Moonies or the Unification Church, the Hare Krishnas, Afro-American religions, Falun Gong, etc., that I call the emerging global denominationalism. Of course, they compete with many other forms of secular imagined communities, as well as with modern nationalism. The emerging global denominationalism in this respect includes both religious as well as secular denominations. Who are you? What's your name? I'm Tibetan Buddhist. I'm a Chinese, Han Chinese. I'm a Hindu. I'm whatever. The names that we give ourselves when we encounter each other on the globe. By denominationalism, I mean a system of mutual recognition of groups within society. It is the name we give to ourselves and the name by which others recognize us. And of course, many of us have multiple denominations. I'm a Catholic, I'm an American, I'm an Spaniard. I'm also, because my wife, Ukrainian, and you can be all these things at once. Indeed, as we already point out, distinctive of the American system of religious denominationalism is the fact that it is not state-regulated, that it is voluntary, and that it is a system of mutual recognition of group identities. Parallel to the general process of secularization, which started as a historical process of internal secularization within Western Christendom, but was later globalized through the European colonial expansion, there is a process of constitution of a global system of religions, which can be best understood as a process of global religious denominationalism, whereby all the so-called world religions are redefined and transformed in contraposition to the secular through interrelated reciprocal processes of particularistic differentiation, universalistic claims, and mutual recognition. Like the internal denominationalism in the United States, global denominationalism is emerging as a quasi self-regulated system of religious of religious pluralism and mutual recognition of religious groups in global civil society. Finally, global sacralization. The modern secular is by no means synonymous with the profane, nor is the religious synonymous with the modern sacred. Only the social as religious is synonymous with the sacred in Durkheimian terms. In this respect, modern secularization entails a certain profanation of religion through its privatization and individualization, and a certain sacralization of the secular spheres of politics, sacred nation, sacred citizenship, sacred constitution, of the secular sphere of science, temples of knowledge, and of the secular sphere of economics, commodity fetishism. But the truly modern sacralization, which constitutes the emerging global civil religion, is what Durkheim already announced at the beginning of the 20th century as the cult of the individual and the sacralization of humanity through the globalization of human rights. In this context, Durkheim was simply following a long line of Enlightenment prophets like Saint-Simon and Comte being the most prominent among them, who had assumed that a new religion of humanity would sooner or later replace the old theocentric religions. The triumph and global expansion of human religion, religious of human rights principles seem to confirm part of their visions. What none of these prophets could have anticipated was the fact that the old gods and the old religions, whose death Durkheim announced, would gain or could gain new life by becoming the carriers of the process of sacralization of humanity. The transformation of Catholicism in the second half of the 20th century offers the most obvious illustration. The Catholic Church had consistently condemned the modern discourse of human rights since its emergence at the time of the American and French revolutions. The principle of religious freedom was particularly odious since it implied making equal the true religion and the false ones. only in the 1960s, as part of the aggiornamento, an Italian word that means bringing up to date. Did the Catholic Church at last accept modern human rights doctrines? The Second Vatican Council Declaration on Religious Freedom, titled Dignitatis Humanae and Human Dignity, recognized the inalienable right of every individual to freedom of conscience based on the sacred dignity of the human person. Thereafter, the popes became untiring world travelers, proclaiming everywhere the sacred dignity of the human person. In this respect, the popes have learned to play, perhaps more effectively than any competitor, the role of a citizen, of a Catholic. Catholic means universal, that is, global and universal human society. One could almost say that the popes want to assume the role of high priest of a new global civil religion of humanity. One can find within all religious traditions generally similar yet particularly different processes of adjustment and response to processes of globalization. Each world religion is being constituted on the global level through similar interrelated processes of particularistic differentiation, universalistic claims, and mutual recognition. As Roland Robertson has emphasized, universal particularism and particular universalism are intrinsically interrelated and inherent to processes of globalization. Each world religion claims its universal right to be unique and different, that thus its particularism, while at the same time presenting itself globally as a universal path for all of humanity. Global denominationalism emerges through a process of mutual recognition of the particular and universal claims. Human rights, including the right to religious freedom, are presently in the process of becoming globalized. But the fact that religious freedom is becoming a universal aspiration does not mean that religious freedom means necessarily the same thing everywhere. It may mean different things in different countries, in different cultures, and in different religious traditions. And these different meanings may be in conflict with one another. Western policies intended to implement international religious freedom may conflict with other cultures' understanding of religious freedom and will be resisted accordingly.